and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to the kind people. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning. I'm not one of the kind people, am I?
Yeah, you have your moments.
Oh, yeah, every
day. Kalo, how you doing? What's going on? Hi, you all right?
Yeah, good.
See, you're all worked up. You're all excited this morning. You've already been here for an hour doing the Rachel Maddow show. Everything's different, huh? You're awake. You're clear. Your teams have done something you're excited about. I don't understand the language you speak when it comes to the sports. What happened?
The Mets won 4 in a row. And the Yankees lost. Red Sox won. And Gary Sheffield, like, shoved a fan. It was a great day.
Oh, yeah, he popped some guy or something, right?
Yes. He was roid raged.
Oh, no, see that.
But that's what the people who support steroids, that's the kind of game they're looking for. They want to see baseball get a little more interesting. Isn't that right?
I don't know if we want them to punch fans.
Why? Why not make everything like hockey, Chris? Why not? Well, why can't it all be about blood sport?
That's fine if the professional athlete punches another professional athlete, but not some guy who's drunk and, you know, is just hanging out.
So you don't think that they should punch fans?
I think that's a little bit too far.
Have you ever read any of the emails I send out to people? In a good moment. I think, honestly, if they're going to allow steroids in the sport, they should let the players carry the bat to the bases. You know? Just like, you know, get out of the way! Get out of the way!
Well, now, didn't Sheffield say that he thought that was flaxseed oil like Barry Bonds?
Oh, yeah, he made some excuse.
Yeah.
Flaxseed oil. Oh, you'd know if
wasn't steroids. Flaxseed. No, it wasn't. It was Rubon's steroids.
Yeah, but what that was their excuse, that it was flaxseed oil?
That's what they said the label said.
That's ridiculous. Well, why would they be rubbing flaxseed oil on themselves?
To heal their aching knees.
Oh, they're full of it.
They are skilled professional athletes, pal.
That want to be large and big and superhuman.
Hey, look.
Everyone's got these Joe Colas. Where did they come from? Did somebody send us a case of Joe Cola? Now, I've never tried
it. I don't know,
but I'm sitting there.
Thank you.
Whoa, cold. I'm talking to the cat who hosts the I'm talking to the cat who hosts the show across the hall, you know, and he looks at me. I got a cup of tea. I got a cup of water. I got a Joe Cola. I got a bag of candy. He's like, wow, you're ready to go, aren't you? Got your Joe Cola. You got your candy. I'm looking at him like, I never tried Joe before. And he's like, whoa. You know, I'm like, and then I'm thinking to myself, what the hell am I worried about? If I look back at what I used to do back in the 80s,
Joe Cola ain't nothing.
It's like I'm sitting there going, I've never tried it before I went on. What's going to happen? Oh, no, I'm seeing monsters. It's good soda.
It's good soda, but, you know, they fill it almost right up to the top. Look at that, man. That's very close to the top of the Joe Cola.
Riley's got... You are so hooked on this stuff. It's unbelievable.
I stopped coffee, and I'm hooked on Joe.
I don't even know who left these here. Somebody's trying to sabotage everything, because I know by the second segment... Like, Riley, so what's going on, man? You remember like I used to be when it was Dunkin' Donuts?
Uh-oh.
Now I'm going to be wondering whether or not that food's coming for 2 hours.
Oh, man.
Remember? Because our ex-CEO, Doug Krieger, got us a little deal going with the city bakery downtown, and they've been the last 2 Fridays they've been sending up the beautiful spread, so now we're still not completely sure if it's going to be a steady thing, so now I'm going to sit here for 2 hours going, I don't care who's on the show, I wonder if that food's coming.
We got good people on the show, though.
No, it's going to be a great show. I'm very excited about the show. We have Melissa Boyle Maley, who is a CIA agent.
Yeah.
Very exciting to talk to a CIA agent. Very exciting to talk to a female CIA agent. Not in a sexual way, just because it's you know.
Uh-huh.
All right, well, maybe that was a little weird for me, and it was kind of exciting. I felt sort of intimidated in a good way. Uh-huh. There was something provocative about the whole thing, but not in a real sexual way, just sort of like I should shut up now. I'm still under the wire here. I don't think my wife's up while I speak this way.
There you go.
We have David K. Johnston, one of our favorite guests, the author of Perfectly Legal, the covert campaign to rig our tax system to benefit the super rich and cheat everybody else. We're going to ask him about some tax information because today is tax day.
Today is tax day. And I got to tell you, Maren, mm-hmm. I figure I'm a pretty knowledgeable guy about a few things.
Yeah.
But David K. Johnston's article about how... working people are getting screwed by this tax system, by this administration, opened my eyes to a whole bunch of stuff that's just, it's all just sitting beneath the surface.
Yeah.
And the American people, you know, by and large, unfortunately, most of them don't end up reading David K. Johnson. So they don't know that, you know, working people, the working poor, are the targets of the IRS. This is insane.
Well, did I just hear Rachel Maddow say that they're closing a lot of the IRS helping places?
105.
All right, so they're making it more difficult for people to get help to fill out their tax forms, and they're privatizing tax collections to basically strong-arm agencies, right?
Yeah, so bounty hunters.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's like, how much can this working people of this country, how much can the middle class take? And I'm just wondering still, are any of you ashamed that you voted for this president because you allowed him to scare you into thinking that you had to vote for him, and now to see the policies that are coming down the pike that are going to screw you and your family out of a future? You know, not just the present, but how, I mean, you can't go get help for your taxes, and now they're not going to have the IRS collect them. They're going to do it more efficiently, and they're going to hire the mob or something.
Well, it's getting to a point now in this country. Between bankruptcy bills and the IRS and nothing personal IRS, just in case they're listening.
Yeah.
I don't want to, or, you know, most people here in Air America figure they're going to get audited anyway.
Yeah.
Mark Maron, Los Angeles, California. Anyway.
Thank you. No. Mark Riley, New Jersey. Real nice of you.
Hey,
I'm just working with the guy who's got money over there too, Mark Maron in California. I was audited years ago.
So was I. I've been audited. Look, it is not a fun process. But see, now what people are going to be facing is a guy with a blonde mullet banging on your door, carrying a 30-odd six, saying, where's the money? You know, you ever see that show on TV, that guy Dog?
I know what you're talking about, and they claim it's a liberal media. This is a big bone throw to the conservative media. They're like, if we get all these tax collectors going, think about the television possibilities we could have.
Absolutely.
Tax collector. Look, he's running. He's running.
Yep.
I had the weird moment. Maybe I don't need to talk about this now. I was driving in, you know, and I drive past there's a strip club right underneath the bridge.
Okay. Under the tri-borough?
Yeah. And I don't know what it's called, but I saw that sad moment, like it's 4 a.m, and I saw that moment where the two guys, one's carrying the other guy. Yeah, he's all drunk, you know, and it's 4 a.m.
Oh, man, I saw that down the block here last week.
And they're climbing into the cab, and I'm looking at the drunk guy, he's right at that point, and you're like, oh, this could be a messy cab ride home. And just to think, like, just hours before, he's like, look at all of them, this is the best night of my life, you know, just... There's so much possibility and potential and having such a good time. You know that moment where you just cross that line and you feel that first wave of weird sweat and you're like, oh no.
Yeah, here it comes.
Fun
here
time
comes.
Over.
Hey, let me tell you something.
The boobies are spinning.
It's scary. When you get out here on 34th Street, you see these guys who are veering back and forth on both sides of the sidewalk?
Yeah.
I almost thought I was going to hit one of them one day because he looked like he was getting ready to step out into the street. I mean, they get really, and there's one particular place not far from here where that closes about the time we come in.
Yeah.
And these guys are tanked. They are done.
I'll tell you, it's one of the great. I'm so happy I just don't drink anymore just because of that. Because, you know, at the beginning of a night where you get that perfect buzz on and you're like, yeah, man, this is great. It's so hard to manage that. And you're just always just one step away from, I got to go home, you guys. I got to go home now. Now, somebody help me. And then, you know, of course, waking up going, where are my pants?
Yeah.
Well, what happened?
Well, hey, we got a substitute for that. We got Joel.
I've only had a couple of sips, and I think it might be working.
I'm going to take care of it during the next break.
Sure, my legs are numb. Are your legs? 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of The Shadow Government.
When last we left Mark Maron, Blanche had proven that the document linking George Bush to Osama bin Laden was a fake, and that secret agent Henriette Mantel might be the one who faked it.
Mark, what's wrong? What did Blanche say?
I'll tell you back at your apartment. Let's move.
All right, we're here. Are you going to tell me now?
Man, you drive like a maniac. It took like 2 seconds to get here. How the hell do you still have a license?
What are you doing?
I'm booting up your computer. Relax, dollface.
You look more jittery than Bush reading his poll numbers.
But why? Maybe I can find what you're looking for.
Don't move a muscle, sweet cheeks. The party's over. The jig is up. The fish is in the fryer and the dew's on the corn. The clouds sweeping out the circus tent. And
it's all over when the fat lady sings?
I try to avoid that one.
Oh. Oh.
Lady, you're more exposed than James Gannon's old website picture.
Good analogy.
Thanks, man. I know what you're looking for, Mark. The fake memo she wrote. Time to come clean, Pam Hoagland of Sweetwater, Texas.
Pam Hoagland? Wait, I found it. The memo between Bush and Bin Laden. You faked it on this computer. And the worst part is you put it in a folder labeled Mark Dumbass. You'd think you would have at least picked Mark Moron. You know, Mark Maron, Mark Moron. Seriously, it works a lot better.
Damn you.
I had my suspicions about Ms. Hoagland myself, so I did a little investigating of my own. Turns out she's not an agent at all. She's part of the Bush conservative neocon death cult.
Can I use that?
It's all yours, buddy. She had us all fooled. Well, almost all of us.
Bitch, we had a spa day together and everything. I even paid. I want those towels.
Barbara Boxer, how many people have the keys in this place?
The Bush neocon death cult was just using you as a pawn, Mark. They wanted you to go public with that story about Bin Laden and Bush being linked. Over and above, their families doing oil business together for years, and Bush flying Bin Laden's relatives out of the country after 9/11, and, of course, Bush Sr.'s membership in the Carlyle Group, along with members of the Saudi royal family who've been accused of financing the Taliban.
If you published that letter, it would have made the left look like a bunch of crackpots and paranoid idiots. That's just what they wanted. It's called getting rathered. And even worse, it would have obscured the one thing Bush could never have revealed. What's really going on with him and Bin Laden.
All right, everybody out. You can't do a thing to me. You can't arrest someone for trying to make a fool out of somebody, or else Monica Lewinsky would be doing hard time.
Hey, now.
Beat it, Maron. And as far as the two of you are concerned, Heil Bush! Heil Bush! I'm taking those spa towels.
So was it all just business between you and me?
Let's put it this way, Mark. My girlfriend and I had a good laugh about it.
You mean you were gay and you slept with me?
No, that happened afterward. Right afterward. That's cold.
All right, nobody move. Bernie Carrick! Did they just leave the door to this place wide open? What are you doing here, Carrick?
Y'all know too much and I haven't been in the scene in months.
That's because you're old news, Carrick. Drop it, or I'll fill you full of more lead than a New Jersey river under new EPA guidelines.
Colin Powell!
Mark, Bill, Barbara, get out of here. I'll deal with these two.
You bet your life I'll get out of here. I'm getting claustrophobic.
Come on, Mark. Let's go get some tasty cakes.
I don't think so, Bubba. I'm tired of dancing around this thing. You know all the hiding places in the White House. I want to get up close to the man.
What plan does Mark have in mind? How did Bill Clinton just happen to turn up at that apartment? Or Barbara Boxer? Or Colin Powell? And refresh my memory. Who was Bernie Carrick again? Find out next time when we hear Bernie Carrick tell Pam Hoagland.
How would you like to do something kinky with a former nominee for Homeland Security Chief?
How would you like a lesbian to throw up on your shoes?
So that's a yes?
That's next time on The Shadow Government. And stay tuned later for the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company Players production of Mark Maron, Advice Columnist.
Our next letter says, Dear Mark, I'm desperately, desperately lonely. People at my job take me for granted. None of them realize that deep down, I just want someone to hold me in their arms and tell me I'm beautiful. What am I to do? And it's signed, New York Confidential. But the return address says Wayne Gilman.
Oh, thanks a lot, Mark. I'm never going to hear the end of this.
Beautiful? You want someone to call you beautiful?
Shut up, Riley.
That's coming up later on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
Shut up, Riley. Hey. 24 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. Hey, look, this is awful. And, you know, I want to blame it all on Republicans, but it turns out that there's been some sneaky Democratic congressmen in the House that helped pass this bankruptcy bill. Right, Riley?
Absolutely. The vote was 302 to 126. That means 73 Democrats, because actually it was 125 Democrats plus one independent, Bernie Sanders from Vermont. So 73 Democrats crossed the line to vote for the bankruptcy.
And they were all, this is primarily, I mean, this is bad. This is bad for people. You know, this is one of those bills where obviously a lot of these Democrats were on the tip of the credit card companies, and you know, they were donors to their campaigns, and now they're paying them back with legislation that the credit card companies bought. But this basically makes the bankruptcy courts collection agencies for credit card debt. It's an awful bill because 9 out of 10 bankruptcies occurs. They actually occur because of health costs, loss of employment, divorce. And you know, really, it's a very small percentage that happens because of irresponsibility or personal behavior. And they just characterize this as that being the main cause. The Republicans framed it that way. But it's just not true, and it's going to be hard for a lot of people to get back on their feet now for a lot of reasons. But this is going to be no help whatsoever.
None whatsoever. This is means testing for people who are seeking to declare bankruptcy. It is trying to hit a net with an anvil. The fact of the matter is very few people who declare bankruptcy are doing so to cheat or to walk away from their obligations or to do something that's generally seen as negative. The credit card companies just want to get a little bit more out.
Isn't that unbelievable? And they wouldn't put a cap on what the credit card interest rates could be.
Nope.
I mean, the credit card companies are predatory. They encourage people to get into debt, which is really what this, you know, culture of ownership. Ownership society is really a culture of debt. Most people do not own anything. They are the proud owners of debt. To a bank, to a credit card, to a loan officer or a loan company. I guess it would be a bank, but it's not. They have these loan companies.
Well, they got loan companies. They got banks. They got car, you know, places that loan you money for a car. They're all different kinds of places where you can get into debt. There's very little help trying to get out of debt. And the passage of this bankruptcy bill, which Bush is going to sign, means it's going to be that much more difficult for people to really try and get out from under.
$30 billion a year is what the credit card industry makes. This legislation would boost their profits by 5%, huh? That's who the Bush administration really cares about. Corporate clients, corporate entities, individual people who are struggling, not so much.
Hey, look, according to John Conyers, and he would know, the Republicans are practicing Robin Hood in reverse. They repealed the estate tax. They give, you know, they passed this bankruptcy bill. It really does show whose side these folks are on.
I'm going to sneeze. I hope it comes. I hate being in this weird gray area, this weird tickly kind of like, I really want it to happen. It'll feel so good on a Friday just to sneeze right now. I got to
drink some Jolt. That'll help.
Well, maybe it will. It'll tickle my nose.
There you go.
All right, we'll be back with Melissa Boyle Molly. Molly? Molly after this, Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
All hopped up on this weird concoction.
It's gone.
The joke.
It's gone.
I'm sipping mine. I'm taking it easy. I got the buzz on. And they're not even a sponsor. I'm tired. I'm tired of talking about products on the air that aren't even sponsors, but just because we're doing it, we shouldn't do that. We should say the secret juice.
Well, yeah, I know. And the unnamed mayonnaise.
And I didn't sneeze. I couldn't sneeze. I hate that. I got a little cold thing going. And I couldn't, now I'm burping too. This is ridiculous. What a great morning it is, Friday. Hey, it is Friday, so let's try to take it easy, can we? Uh-oh. Sorry, there's a button for that, but I don't want to hide anything from you people.
Yeah.
Hey, so we talked to a CIA agent, and I got her name wrong, Melissa Boyle Maley, and it was very interesting because, you know, what you think a CIA agent is. We've talked to a couple. Bob Baer's a regular guest. We dig him. But this woman was very charming, very candid, sort of interesting. But, you know, you just wonder. I just sat there, and I think it was kind of turning me on a little bit, that the idea that, like, you know, she was just looking at me going, I could kill you in two moves. You're like, oh, you know, and I just, like, fall on the ground. Like, you know, can we do the interview now?
Yeah, this is a real CIA agent, folks.
So, Porter Goss is an...
Oh,
this isn't going to go well, this interview, if I can't get a question out. How long were you in the CIA?
Hey, that wasn't even a tough question. How are we going to proceed with this?
But we did. We actually did. We're able to talk about, you know, what it was. You know, what's it like being a woman in the CIA, and also renditioning
yeah.
that she's, you know, in support of.
But she draws the line of torture, and you know, we talked a little bit about that, but that was where I got the vibe, you know, sort of like maybe you ought not. All right, maybe I'm not too comfortable. This interview is horrible.
You know, she was one of the few female operators that was fluent in Arabic, and that's been a big problem ever since she retired in '98. I mean, in the run up to '01, that was one of the things they said. They had no operatives that spoke Arabic, or very few.
Aren't you amazed with people that can speak different languages?
Yeah, I am.
I mean, like I look at people like even Pashman, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman of New Jersey. And Linda, we got the email. Very cute. Don't think we don't know that it was you, L. Pashman, more Pashman's picks. Well, you know, look. But anyways, but even Dan Pashman speaks a little French. I always look at people who can speak different languages that it's like they have this secret weapon, and you sort of want, just speak a little. Come on, just do it. Well, we didn't do that to her because I would have been, you know, hey, I was just asking you to. All right, well, anyway, she's got a book. It's called The Denial and Deception, An Insider's View of the CIA from Iran-Contra. Iran. I watched the CNN commercials.
Right.
Iran-Contra to 9/11. She's also going to be featured in the New York Times Magazine this weekend. Here now is our interview with a CIA agent, Melissa Boyle Maley. Yes. Any second now? It's okay. But I guess it was a couple of weeks ago that we actually had the conversation with her. And I guess we're having a little problem with the board here. The thrust of the interview, though, as we improvise, should we go back to... there you go. Someday things will run smoothly. When we go to the new studio, Riley.
Oh, yeah.
When we're in the new studio, nothing
everything will work,
will
I understand.
Happen.
Did she strike you as a CIA agent, though? If you'd seen her on the street, would you say that woman is a possible CIA agent?
No. I don't know who the CIA agents are, and you just assume that they have secret, like I said, that they have these secret powers. But, you know, I think a lot of them are just people that, you know, work in the field offices or are agents. We have this James Bond idea.
I know.
Of what these people can do, and it's not necessarily the truth, is it?
No, it's not, and it's weird because I've been at different functions. There was a big controversy some years ago when the National Association of Black Journalists had their annual convention, and they allowed the CIA to set up a recruiting booth at the convention. A lot of the journalists were really upset, but the CIA was out recruiting journalists.
Yeah.
Or what? I'm not quite sure. That was a pretty big issue. But the fact is you kind of really don't get an idea. You have these recruiters there, but they look like regular army recruiters or regular, normal folks. They're not in uniform, obviously, but they look like normal people, like college recruiters or something.
Well, we'd buy the myth. Let's see if we can get this thing up and working at 38 past the hour, Air America Radio. Two past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. It's Friday, so there's the facts from the Streisand compound with today's liberal agenda for Friday. Write these down. One, request an emergency extension of your rights. Two, in the IRS comment box, explain that you claim your parents as dependents because you won't take care of them, you bastards. Three, mail in your return using the new Reagan stance, but stick Ronnie facing backwards. They'll totally hate that. Four, come to think of it, it's not the mail system, it's female, or possibly even she-male. Yeah. Five, today's phrase, just drop this in the conversation. Gee, I hope all my taxes go to invade some other oil-rich third-world nation. Wake up, sheeple, it's Operation Alaskan Freedom. How clear does it have to be? What, do you want me to spell it out for you? Paint you a picture? Yes.
Whoa!
I got the hook shot into the garbage can. We're easily entertained here at Morning Sedition. So now, hopefully, we are easing into our first segment of our interview with Melissa Boyle Maley. She is the author of Denial and Deception, An Insider's View of the CIA from Iran-Contra to 9/11. And she's also going to be featured in the New York Times Magazine this Sunday. So here we go, Kalo.
What happened? What's gone wrong over there, if you can put it in a nutshell?
The CIA got away from the basics of its business, recruiting human spies, collecting non-biased intelligence, being an action arm for the president, and we stopped doing the hard parts of our job.
Why did that all stop? I mean, was it all of a sudden? Was it progressive?
It was progressive, but it was a downward spiral. Iran Contra started it. The agency began to grow very risk averse operationally, but also in Washington, the environment was very risk averse. Intelligence was not considered to be have the same premium that it had previously, and so the risks just weren't worth taking.
So what happened with in George Tenet's CIA, which is who you worked under, right?
Yeah, one of many.
He, you know, it seemed to me that, you know, the agency became sort of manipulated by this president to, you know, to provide intelligence that he wanted and not any other type of intelligence. Is that possible?
Well, I think what happened particularly with George Tenet, Mark, was that he, in the latter part of his time at the agency, he started playing more the politician than the advisor to the presidency, and he didn't deal with the information in a straightforward kind of way as he should have.
You talk in your book about the fact that the agency, particularly on the, I guess, on the operational level, wasn't diverse enough. Talk a little bit about what you meant by that. Where was the CIA lacking in terms of diversity?
I'd like to talk specifically about the director of operations, because I think that was really where the weaknesses continue to be. When I say it's not diverse enough, I mean across the board in terms of gender and also in minority hiring. It's very rare to see a person of color as a case officer in the CIA today. But let's take this on an operational level. If you're not recruiting ethnic whatevers into the agency as case officers, where are you going to get those native speakers of Arabic or Pashto or whatever?
What did you do at the agency?
I was a case officer or a field operative, and I went out and lived overseas, worked overseas, and recruited human spies.
Human spies?
Yeah.
That sounds exciting. So now how do you recruit a spy?
Very carefully.
I could imagine.
Do you say, like, is there a code that you speak? Is there an interview that you do? Like, how would you like to do something for us?
Well, I tell you, you know, I'm not going to get into the methods of it all, but it's not nice and clean and simple, like, hey, would you like to commit espionage on behalf of the U.S. government? You never work that way.
We'll give you a special hat and a cool trench coat.
We have something we call cold pitches, though, that we do, and that's when we come right out of the cold and we'll pitch somebody and say, you want to work for the CIA, we'll give you a ton of money or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what? That stuff seldom ever works.
Oh, really? Doesn't it? It's just not enough?
No, because usually when you do that, you're desperate and they know it.
Oh, yeah. Now, there have been recent developments, obviously, in the Middle East, in Syria, in Lebanon, in terms of changes since Yasser Arafat's death. How do you analyze all that? You've been out of the agency now. How do you analyze the CIA's ability to adapt to many of these changes?
Well, if you're talking about the Middle East, we're really in a period of transformation, and this is, and we're seeing societal changes across the breadth of the whole region. And so, what does this mean for the CIA? It means you're having emerging threats from areas that you never paid attention to in the past, and the only way you're going to get your arms around it is by putting more people out on the streets.
I'm wondering too. I mean, when we look at the long-term future of the Middle East, and we look at some of these things that we hear the CIA doing, for example, the whole issue of renditioning and taking people either from American prisons or places like Gitmo and taking them to other countries where they might end up being tortured. Is that something that you think a role that the agency ought to play, or should they not be doing this kind of thing?
I support the rendition policy because if you have to look at it from one perspective, first of all, this is the practice of getting a dangerous person off the streets, shutting down whatever their operational planning is in play at that moment in time, and maybe wrapping up the rest of the cell. Now, that has had a proven practice of saving American lives. I was involved in rendition operations. I speak from first-hand knowledge. Now, it's a whole separate issue when we start getting involved into torture, and I will never condone torture. I think what has happened now, the CIA developed the rendition policy, sending people to third countries, at a time when it was very difficult to get indictments here in the U.S. because we didn't have very strong counterterrorism, anti-terrorism laws. We now have the Patriot Act. We should use that act. We should render these people, these terrorists, suspected terrorists, to the United States and put them through our court systems and using all the checks and balances that we have in our system, which means not torturing these people.
But doesn't that break down in the sense that if you can't figure out what they're really accused of, or they're not being held for anything, how do the court systems apply to these people other than to let them go?
Well, but you see, that's my point, is that you have to be able to follow a process. If you cannot find that they were involved in wrongdoing, then they shouldn't be in jail. I think it's very important, at least when I was there, it was very important to make sure that when you did a rendition, you got the right guy, all right, and that you had a body of evidence against him, knowing that he was plotting in something and he was a threat and needed to be removed. And, you know, sometimes the CIA would snatch people from overseas without the support of the host government. These are very risky operations. They were done relatively, not very often, let's put it that way, well, I was with the agency, because they're high risk. But on this particular operation, you know, you can't just make people disappear forever. And that's something that the CIA is now grappling with, is how do you deal with these so-called ghost folks? In our society, we're a democracy. We don't, that smacks of Central America in the 1980s. And you know what? We as a nation just don't want to go there.
Didn't the CIA help out down there, though?
We were fighting a counterinsurgency in Central America in the 1980s. We were not making people disappear.
Yeah, so why don't you shut up, little man? What now? Did you hear the in her voice? That was like, because I know, I was like, well, but didn't the CIA, you know, disappear people?
I don't know, man. You talk bad about the IRS, bad about the CIA. You got problems.
Yeah, we're live now. She's not here, or I wouldn't be talking like this. Right? Oh, wrong button. Wrong button. The one I meant was.
Oh.
That's much different. Anyways, we're gonna come. We're gonna continue now with our interview with Melissa Boyle Maley. We had to take a break there because I thought I was gonna get hit. I had to leave the room. She was looking at me kind of. She's got an article. She's gonna be in the New York Times Magazine. Now, here we go.
From an operational standpoint, how significant do you think it is that at this point John Negroponte has been brought in as this intelligence czar, and Porter Goss's role seems to be a little cloudy now in terms of who is briefing the president on a daily basis? Operationally, looking at it from the outside, was this a good move?
I support the recommendation by the 9/11 Commission to establish a national director of intelligence. But this fixes one very big problem that we have within the intelligence community at the top of the pyramid structure. You know, who's in charge? Who's responsible? That's an important fix that needed to be made. But if that's the first and the last thing that we do in terms of intelligence reform, we are in big trouble.
So now Porter Goss seems overwhelmed with his job. He seems like last week or a couple of weeks ago, he's like, oh my God, how do we work the mouse? Why is he so overwhelmed? Is that unusual, or is it different than it was? Or?
I don't think it's any different. So maybe coming from the cushy life as a congressman, it was more difficult of a transition. But, you know, it's a hard job, and you work all the time. And I'm rather hard on some of our DCIs in my book, but I recognize this is a very hard job and a lot of responsibility. The challenge for Goss is really to remake and create a new vision for the CIA for this next period, and to improve their capabilities on the ground to collect intelligence and to analyze it. And it's a big challenge, and he hasn't had a very good first step forward.
Hmm. Can I get back to interesting for 1 second? I need to ask, because we're covering this a lot, and it seems that it's being characterized by the media as being specifically that these people are being flown to other countries to sort of circumvent rules of revolving around torture in order to get information. And now, is that just not true? Has what you were involved with become that, or is what I'm saying not true?
When there are three kinds of rendition operations. The first kind is when you will work with the host government and within the confines of a legal structure, and you will bring an individual to the United States. The FBI will always take the lead in these cases to face the court system here in the U.S. The second kind of a rendition is one that you will you will snatch somebody, so to speak, without the help of the host government. And the third kind is when you will, whether you snatch them or not, or you have a cooperation with the host government, you will take that person to a third country. After pre 9/11, the first type of rendition was in the majority. Post 9/11, it appears that the third type of rendition is now in the majority.
And the reason for bringing them to a third government, right, is what you're saying, is to what?
In The original reasons were to, if you could not have an indictment, there was not sufficient evidence, and you did not have the legal authorities in the U.S. to actually convict somebody, you would turn that individual over to a government that did have a viable court proceeding against them. And so you had some authorities in which to turn them over to, that they wouldn't just be let loose and become a danger on the streets again.
So it's interesting that the language of that is that, you know, if that particular government allows torture to get the indictment, then so be it, right?
The CIA has had this practice of papering over this issue. In other words, if I don't see it, it maybe doesn't exist.
It seems to go on a lot in this administration.
And it's very uncomfortable, I would have to say, and this wink and this nod of how we're treating torture. And that's why I think that it's time that the U.S., the Department of Justice in particular, and the CIA revisit this turning over of the renditions to third countries.
Mm. Now, you left the agency in 2002. I'm assuming that was either just before or right at the time Dick Cheney started making little trips out there in terms of wanting to ramp up intelligence on Iraq. Let's say for the sake of argument that you weren't there when that happened, but how would you have reacted if the vice president, if you knew as an agent that the vice president of the United States was making these trips out there and kind of shaking things up, as apparently he did?
Well, I think one of the things that we saw in the run-up to the Iraq war, and you certainly heard a lot of grumblings about this, leaks into the press, was the high-level attention that analysis coming out of the agency was getting on a very detailed level. What was happening was politicians were being permitted to frame the debate on whether or not and how and whatever we should be doing in regards to Iraq. And the minute you do that as an analyst of intelligence and letting somebody else frame the debate, you no longer are answering the questions yourself intellectually, honestly, of what does the policymaker need to know? What is the whole picture I need to paint? If you sit there and you answer their 20 questions every day, then you are not telling them what you should be telling them. You're just telling them what they want to hear.
Now, that means then when George Tenet said that the weapons of mass destruction thing was a slam dunk, was that what he was doing?
I think that was a perfect example of George Tenet wanting to be on the president's team, to be a player, to be the loyal aide in supporting the president on an initiative that the president was determined to pursue.
Did that compromise the reputation of the CIA at that time?
I think that if you look in the aftermath, and especially with the revelations that there were no weapons of mass destruction, I should say nuclear weapons, mm-hmm. Yes, I think it did.
Are you happy to be out?
Yeah, I am.
Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you for inviting me.
That was Melissa Boyle Maley. Her book, Denial and Deception, Insiders Through the CIA from Iran-Contra to 9/11, is out now. She will also be in the New York Times Magazine this Sunday.
It's surprising, Mark. We've talked to a couple of CIA agents, as you mentioned, and they're really kind of surprisingly candid. I'm surprised that they really will talk about it. I'm kind of, well, it's classified or whatever.
So you have an extra grand.
Yeah, yeah.
So now we got the dog of the week coming up. We got David K. Johnston to talk about taxes. We've got Johnny K. Street to give us some odds on what's happening in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
It is tax day. It's Friday as well. It's kind of like that's the yin and the yang, isn't it? Try to have a good Friday knowing that you might be screwed, or maybe you'll get a big tax return, like $10, $12.
Or maybe even
$20. Wow.
Stay with us. This is Air America Radio.
This is it, geniuses. 6 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. How are you, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes? Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
Kalo on the board. It's Friday. Take it easy. Everything's going to be okay, Kalo. I feel it. Clutch Larson in the booth with P.W. McDonald, Dan Passman, Son of Louis, and Linda Passman out in the night gathering things. Hoping food will come. Hoping. Today is Friday. Yay, but it's tax day. Oh. But maybe it'll be okay. Who knows? I don't understand my taxes. Do you? I have no idea what all the paper is. And as Rachel Maddow said on the news just before, they're closing down a lot of tax shops where they're going to help people. They're just shutting down a bunch of them, and they're going to let private contractors, i.e., perhaps the mob, collect your tax debt. So they're not going to make it any easier, and this is part of the crunch. This is part of the Bush administration's crunch on working people. They slipped it in on you. I hope you're feeling a little dirty and ashamed that you voted for this guy because you let him scare you into voting for him, and now his economic policies are going to destroy this country for a lot of people. Not the people that make $1 billion a year, like, you know, some of his friends and some corporations, or even, you know, $22 million a year, like me. But I still don't like that.
They're going to make out like bandits.
It's unbelievable. And we're going to talk to David K. Johnston all about that. You can read David K. Johnston's new piece in the SF Gate. It's at sfgate.com or at morningsedition.com on a link. It's a very, you know, it's information that you need about how the rich are going to get richer and the rest of us are going to pay more. That's just the bottom line. That's what they're aiming towards. Just the idea in the free market thinking is that if more rich people have money, they'll put more into the economy by setting up businesses and giving more people jobs.
Right.
If they don't put it offshore and protect it in a tax-free, you know, special secret, what do you call those offshore accounts? Offshore accounts?
Oh, offshore accounts.
Yeah.
That's what they are.
That's what I heard that they were called. So I'm glad I got that right. You know, I went into the Thai restaurant last night because my wife and I had some time. My wife's in town. She went out and did some comedy. I went to sleep. We went to the Thai restaurant. I haven't been there in 6 months. And the woman who always used to be like, hello, how are you? You look so good. She goes, you look tired.
Oh.
And your hair is gray.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Wow.
You and your hair is gray?
I wish I had. And boy, if I had come in to order this, I don't know. I would have stopped in the middle of my order and perhaps left out of sadness. Because I'm an old, tired man.
Well, you just should have had Misha punch her out, that's all.
Well, she's a very nice lady. But, you know, Misha said, because, well, what happened was, I'm like, do I look tired and gray? And then Misha goes, well, you look a little bloated because you're a little sick, and you're a little gray, but I like you. It's like, okay, so there's two problems, but you accept me, you like me? You can't win sometimes when you get into that weird zone that's sort of like, am I okay? I don't know, but I like you. What does that mean?
Yep.
So you know what time it is now. It's time for... Mark Riley's Dog of the Week.
That's right. You know, Mark, CNN used to be the cable news channel of record, not just here in the U.S., but around the world. That, of course, was then. Now, the Fox News channel kicks much CNN butt. Here's one reason why. The network has a fairly new president named Jonathan Klein. We say fairly new because presidents of CNN seem to come and go with some regularity over the past few years. Now, on March 25th, Klein appeared on the Charlie Rose Show with Charlie Rose. When asked why there aren't more progressive voices in media, he came up with an astonishing answer. It appears we don't get too worked up about anything. And, Klein says, progressives are pretty morally relativistic. Say what?
Yeah.
Here's the real deal. CNN should never be confused with progressive anything. Put simply, the network is a mess. Fox may be a bunch of right-wing ideologues, but CNN isn't anything, least of all, good. They even let Fox beat them at covering the recent royal wedding. Worse yet, they wimp out when it comes to pairing progressives and conservatives to discuss issues. But I guess that's not Jonathan Klein's call. He's too busy ignoring groups like MoveOn.org, the thousands who protested the Republican convention here in New York, the Iraq War protests, Fahrenheit 9/11. Gee, should I go on? I guess none of these folks get worked up about much. Yo, Jonathan Klein, fix your broken cable network. In the meantime, you're the Morning's Edition Dog of the Week.
Yeah, you forgot to throw Air America on that list.
Oh, yeah, I should have. Well, you know, I didn't want to be self-aggrandizing, but I guess there goes my gig. I guess no, Wolf Blitzer won't be calling, huh?
Yeah, maybe he will. Maybe that's
this is the second time I made them Dog of the Week.
We need that progressive guy from Air America Radio to be on our network.
Yeah.
So he's basically rationalizing. He's basically saying, uh-oh, the sneeze.
Uh-oh.
Is it going to come?
No, don't worry about it.
Oh, it didn't come.
You can call it the Klein.
I love to sneeze when their buildup is like that. But I didn't get to. This is not big news.
This is not what we should be talking about, whether or not I'm going to be sneezing. I'm looking forward to talking about to David K. Johnson in a few minutes because I don't, you know, and I think I'm not alone in this. It's very difficult to understand how to the tax system works, how to pay your taxes, how we're getting screwed, you know, who's winning, who's losing. It's clear that most people are losing and the rich are winning, but to what degree is really mind-blowing. And we got a new bit that we've been doing. We tried it yesterday. We had an odds man come in, Johnny K. Street, to come, you know,
my man,
work the odds on what's going on in Washington. What do you got going this weekend, Ryan?
Oh, I got a few things here and there. But, you know, Mark, I've got to tell you, because you mentioned the thing about the taxes. Most people don't realize, while you all are going to the post office to mail off those returns to the federal government, you know, praying that you'll get the money, but praying you won't be audited, the wealthy just sit back, laugh.
Yeah.
First of all, they don't mail anything.
Right.
They have somebody do that. They have people that do that for them. But secondly, they don't have to worry about audits. They don't get audited at the same percentage that working people get audited.
That's an interesting thing. I was trying to sort of understand that, is that, you know, if you hide enough money or you have enough money, they don't even have the facility. They don't even know. They don't even have the mechanism.
Hundreds of billions of dollars a year. A lot of these investor class people, they underreport exactly what the value of their investments are, the profit on their investments. They do this all the time.
Uh-oh.
They got tax people that do this for them.
You know, it's weird that you say that. I'm not rich, but I have a tax guy because I wouldn't know how to do it.
Well, I have a tax guy, too. But see, the problem is, you know, there's a lot of people out there that go to one of the big tax preparers or whatever. They get their stuff done. They're trying to do the right thing. And they're the ones got the IRS banging on their door saying, excuse me, you underreported by $150. Where's our money?
Yeah, well, that's the weird thing, is that if they come after you and you didn't make that much, the one thing you can rest assured of is that you're not going to owe that much. You know, it's not like, you know what I mean? If you make like $50,000, they're not going to come after you for $200,000.
Well, you know? not unless you
pay taxes for years.
Well, no. Well, yeah, that's one way. Or if you were one of those people that had a few stock options,
mm-hmm.
options that maybe came with your job,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the options are reported at whatever the value was at the time you got them,
yeah.
and then the tech bubble burst, and the value went down to next to nothing.
Yeah.
So you don't have anything, but you still owe them based on the original value of the options.
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious. We'll get David K. Johnson to explain this to us.
Yeah, because I mean, I understand what you just said, but I just know it's wrong.
Radically wrong.
I'm not sure what the thinking is behind that. So we'll talk to David K. Johnson in a little while. We're going to come back with Johnny K. Street and the Dream Diary. So stay with us. It's 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on the air. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Hey, here I am, 18 past the hour, Mark Maron here on Air America Radio with Mark Riley.
Yo.
Our show is called Morning Sedition. It's right here on the dial, wherever it is that you are listening to. You know, hey, that went nowhere, didn't it? Morning Sedition, the facts, the fury, the funny. Don't be stupid. It feels like thinking. I went to my therapist yesterday, and then, of course, last night I have this dream. I walk inside this darkened warehouse, and inside a circle of light is my dead cat Butch, who is pacing slowly around Tom DeLay, who is tied up, gagged, and sitting on a block of ice naked. I say, Butch! Butch, what are you doing? Butch runs a razor-sharp claw along DeLay's throat and says, the Congress is taking much too long getting rid of this so-called majority leader. Butch taps her claw on his forehead. Is that because you are responsible for the... Wait a minute. I'm sorry. Is that because you are responsible for the majority of the bull hot tub Tom? I say, nice job, Butch. The Secret Service will be here any minute. She says, I hope so. Then they can see his shriveled eunuch cooling on ice like a fat pink salmon. I say, Butch, what do you hope to accomplish here? Butch says, you are not enjoying it? I say, oh, yeah, I am enjoying it, Butch. I just don't know what your end game is here. Butch says, like my countrymen, I want the truth. And if I do not get it, I will claw the hammer.
Butch nicked the tip of Delaney's earlobe and a trickle of blood dripped onto his belly. So, Zahama, you paid your wife $500,000. Was it to have sex with you? So, if it's so, if it wasn't nearly enough, I suppose everything in Texas is bigger except your laughably tiny penis. Delaney struggled against his gag. Oh, no, no, Zahama. It is not your turn to speak. You have spoken quite enough. Don't make me fill your mouth with fresh hairballs. I say, what's in the box, Butch? It's clicking and buzzing. Butch picks up a large metal box and says, ah, yes, this is a present for our friend. You're an exterminator, were you not? Delay shakes his head and grunts behind the gag. Butch says, yes, I think you were. And you killed millions of defensive little creatures, didn't you? Well, it is time they had their chance to repay the favor. Butch takes a plastic squeeze bottle, covers Delay with maple syrup, and says, go, my brothers and sisters, take your revenge. She opened the box, and out came swarms of roaches and earwigs and termites, and Tom Delay turned into a writhing mass of hungry insects. Butch lit a cigarette and said, ah, Mark Maron, look at it. It's your culture of life. I woke up, and my bed was filled with tree bark.
Whoa.
Deep, man. Deep, man. My unconscious gets weirder and weirder. Look, folks, if you're getting a little money back for your taxes, or you're expecting to, and you don't know what to do with it, we got a guy that comes on our show now. He came in for the first time yesterday. We want to play it back for you because next week he's coming in again. Here's our chat with Johnny K Street from yesterday.
Politics is often called a sport, so we thought, why not gamble on it, folks? Lay down a few bucks and see what happens.
But not before we talk to an expert. Here's our Inside the Beltway odds maker, Johnny K Street. Johnny, where's the action this week?
Hey, Mark, it follows me, baby. This week, everybody's betting on Tom Delay to go down.
That's what I'm talking about. So where's the smart money, man?
Well, there's a lot of action being laid off. I'm telling you, this guy's a one-man final four.
Yeah.
We got a bunch of different ways you can go on this
one. All right.
Delay goes down because a lobbyist paid for his daughter's wedding shower. 5-1.
That's not bad. That's not bad. That's not bad.
I got a couple of safe bets for you. All right. Let's make you some money.
Okay. What do you
You're
got?
Not going to get rich on these, but they're practically guaranteed.
Okay.
He goes down for taking trips paid for by lobbyists. 2-1.
I want it.
That's safe.
That's me.
Yeah.
My pick, though?
Yeah.
Delay taking others out with him.
He goes
down 2-1.
Yeah.
You can bet the farm on that.
All right.
But you want to make crazy money?
Yeah.
You
got my wallet out.
Go to the off the line bets. Right. This is where the money is.
Okay, what do you got?
Dead hooker in the trunk.
Really?
Surprisingly, that's going off at 30-1. That's looking pretty good.
All right.
Found in hotel room with Jeff Gannon.
Oh wow.
70-1.
You mean that's longer odds than the hooker?
I'm not touching that one in more ways than one, if you know what I mean.
I hear you, man.
Delay starts an amateur wrestling career under the name The Hammer. That's 1,000-1.
That's a long shot.
Yeah, that's a long shot.
I like betting on a long shot, though. So.
Driven stock raving mad by the ghost of Terry Schiavo, past, present, and future. That one's changing as the weeks go by.
It started at
100-1. Now it's a little safer, 20-1.
So it's a good bet.
It's a pretty damn good bet.
All right.
You want to go long term?
Mm-hmm.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. What do you got?
It's a pretty sure thing.
All right.
Delay will end up penniless on the streets of Houston, where he'll be caught shoplifting a bag of stale caramels from a 99-cent store.
Oh, nice.
500-1.
Oh, that's pretty long. But I'll give you a couple bucks. Why not?
Payoff is big, man.
Yeah.
The tricky part is the caramels.
Uh-huh.
You pitch jelly beans, you're screwed. Got to be careful.
All right.
Your best bet is a trifecta. Always.
Okay. What is that?
Delay is driven mad by the ghost of Terry Schiavo, so he kills a hooker. He tries to revive her with stale caramels.
Okay.
You can tell that story on your yacht. Million-1.
Why not a dollar on that?
What's a buck?
Yeah, exactly. What's the long shot?
I got to tell you the truth.
All right.
I told my kid.
What's the long shot, man?
Here's the long shot.
All right.
Bush coming out against Delay. Before there's an indictment.
Okay, yeah.
You hit that one, you can buy your own island. That's $50 million-1.
Oh, I'm definitely putting at least a dollar on that.
Hey, wait a minute, man. We're already halfway there.
I know. Today he came out.
What, you got some information I need?
Today he kind of halfway, Bush kind of half came out against him. Kind of. They weren't good friends.
Those odds are going to change.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, you don't have much time to get your money down on this because my source in the Senate says there's definitely a window and it's closing fast. So get the bets in, fellas.
All right, so who do we call? You?
Just call me, and I got to get out of here. I got another stop at Fox. There's tons of action.
All right, that was Johnny K Street.
Johnny K Street.
Beltway Oddsmaker. We'll see him again soon next week with the new bets.
with the new odds.
Johnny.
Guys, thank you.
All right, take care. Be careful.
Say hi to your cousin Bo Deedle for me, will you?
Yeah.
sounds a little like old Bo.
Take care of yourself, man. All right? Just be careful. See you later. Hey, that's Johnny Cagetree, and hopefully he'll be back next week. Look, we're going to come back here in a minute. We're going to hear Rapture Watch, but we're also going to talk to David K. Johnston. If you don't know what an alternative minimum tax is, if you don't know where the estate tax is and the repeal on the estate taxes and how that affects you, you know, they tried to convince everybody that that affected everybody, and it doesn't.
No.
If you don't know, if you're not the manager of a hedge fund, you might want to listen to this segment because there's a lot of things that I'm sure you don't know. David K. Johnston is a very informative guy. He's here to prove and show us that, as most of us know, that a lot of the jargon around taxes is only to protect the money of the very wealthy. Isn't that right?
Did you know
yeah.
that the IRS, and this is according to David K. Johnston's article, the IRS has no mechanism to check up on capital gains, which is probably why they want to eliminate the capital gains tax, because they can't really keep track. In other words, they don't really know if people are fudging when they submit capital gains.
I guess that was sort of what I was talking about before. So they have no idea. They have no mechanism in place to determine that. And that's where all the big money is, right?
There are people who estimate, yeah. and these are two college professors, say that the capital gains tax cheating alone costs the government $29 billion a year.
$29 billion a year, but they want to restructure Social Security. If the wealthier people in this country would just pay even, you know, half of their share of taxes, it would make an insane difference in how this country operates.
Yeah, but, you know, since 1997, over the last 8 years, Congress has approved more than $1 billion in extra money to the IRS to audit who?
Us.
The working poor.
Well, okay, not quite.
Not quite us.
But there's always that possibility.
But the working poor,
yeah.
the people who are at the bottom of the economic ladder, $1 billion extra to audit them. I got to talk to this guy.
We're going to talk to him, and we're going to hear Rapture Watch, too, as the show progresses. We're also going to talk to a woman later who has a lot of money and refuses to take a refund.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a noble person.
It is a pretty noble person. I want to know what she's doing with that money instead.
Yeah, really. We're going to come back with more here on Air America Radio.
Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
The jolt's wearing off.
I know, you're telling me. That lasts about 10 seconds.
Yeah,
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm never doing that again.
I'm going back to coffee.
I already had a cold, and I do the jolt, and didn't even wake me up. It just made me go, hey, and then I'm done.
You didn't burp through your nose?
I did do that, but I didn't sneeze. I will be in Cincinnati, Ohio at Go Bananas on Friday and Saturday, May 6th and 7th. So all you people listening to 1530 WCKY, the revolution of talk radio, come check it out. You can also go to their website, WCKY.com. Huh? Well, yeah, for information. Right now, the Bible's Book of Revelations portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah, one of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of El Monte, California. Your grace.
Awaken thy night reveling hedonist to the blinding light of God's Zippo lighter. For it shall illuminate every nook and cranny of thy haughty minds, which have become Tupperware for rancid noodles.
What?
Cast not thy grace into the eternal pit of misery, thy regular viewers of daytime talk shows, for Jesus finds no levity at the sight of Ellen dancing. The rapture is upon us, and soon you'll find yourself kneeling at the pedestal of God's glory and licking his boots of shiny, shiny leather, whiplash girl child in the dark. Oh, tata mata, pita katita! Satan, thy power is strong today for conjuring up the lyrics of avant-garde rock group from the 60s. But nothing can stop me from being the bearer of good tidings. For according to my favorite source of tidings, CNN, or as I usually call them, the crazy nabobs of non-Christianity. Next month, a company in Valencia, California, will start selling a talking Jesus doll that can recite biblical verses when you push the button on his back. Just like the real Jesus.
Oh, no.
Other dolls will include a Moses that can recite the Ten Commandments and a Mary Magdalene that can recite the 10 most diabolical sexual positions. Yeah, she was a whore.
What she was.
Yeah. Now let's take a moment to sit back and calmly reflect on what all this means prophetically.
Ah! We're going to die!
This doll is clearly the Antichrist and will ultimately lead a satanic force of blasphemous Old Testament puppets to attack the Holy Land, start the Armageddon, and bring about the end of the world. Hear me out, for it was prophesied in Revelation, pick a number, any number, and I quote it, and they worshipped dolls of many incarnations who gave power unto the beast. One was given unto himself movable eyes with blinkers and winkers, raisable eyebrows, wiggling ears, and a stick-out tongue. And he went by the name of Barney Splinters. Once, while Satan sat next to him on the stage drinking from an ordinary glass of water, Barney did speak great blasphemies to the audience. He was incorrigible. There was a two-drink minimum. End quota. Now I'm sure you're all asking, hey, Wingnut, how could this story possibly compete with the one last week where a teenager in Morrisville, Vermont, cut the head off a corpse in a cemetery so he could use it as a bong? To which I respond, do we really know the whole story on that yet? Unless he mocked God by making it into a Jesus puppet, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt here. I mean, we don't even know whose head it was now, do we? Perhaps a month from now, when your Jesus doll commands you to go out and rent Guess Who, you'll remember my warning and say to yourself, wow, he was right about that kid making a bong out of some guy's head. Until then, keep on fornicating, fornicate-horings, gorers, and I'll see you at Bananas. Go Bananas, that is. Ye mantendrimos la luz encinito para usted infierno.
Nice, nice.
Wow.
What does that mean at the end?
Sea and hell. Infierno.
Yeah, yeah. Is that
in hell?
Is that Italian? Italian?
The Spanish.
It's Spanish.
The Spanish.
Is it the same in Spanish and Italian? Are you? Do you know that stuff? What are you?
Did I sound like I knew it?
Cardinal,
yeah.
Did you go to Rome for the big Pope of Palooza? Or?
No, I was busy working on my taxes. I missed the whole Pope thing.
Wait a minute. Cardinals don't pay taxes. Aren't you exempt?
Well, I don't exactly have a tax-exempt business. I sell a lot of trinkets.
Yeah. Are you up for Pope or anything? Anything coming up or? You appearing anywhere?
Look, I'm separating myself from the Catholics because, well,
okay,
you know, they have a lot of superstitions and rituals that I don't really approve of.
Okay.
Like?
For one thing, you know, walking around in all those vestments.
Oh, wow.
So you're just going to do a renegade version of your own religion? Is that what we're up to here?
I have a lot of followers.
Okay, you do. That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. A lot of people email the show asking you advice, religious advice, spiritual advice.
I have a comic book I'm selling. I do comics on the side.
Well, you know, it was great seeing you and have a good weekend. And I want you, I like it when you put the Italian in there because you're the Spanish. It's very good. So can you do more of that?
Yeah, that was Spanish.
All right. It's Spanish.
Whatever. Oops, sorry.
Yeah.
This wasn't Italian.
Yeah, okay, good. What, are we just going to let this trickle in the garbage here? Let's go, get out. How long did you go on for?
See it, go Bananas. Two drink minimum.
It's a few weeks away, all right? I'll see you in Queens, my friend. All right?
Uh-oh.
You take care.
Bye-bye.
Good to see you.
Hey, take your coat.
Take the coat and the hat and the vestments and the whole thing. All right, on the phone now, author of Perfectly Legal, the covert campaign to rig our tax system to benefit the super rich and cheat everybody else and to hopefully enlighten us. Good morning, David K. Johnson. How are you?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
It's nice to have you on the show again, my friend, because I don't understand any of this. I don't understand the alternative minimum tax. What does that mean?
Well, it means that you don't get the exemptions for yourself, your wife, your children, your property taxes, your income taxes, because those are all treated as abusive tax shelters. And just like the oil depletion allowance, Congress, if you fall under the alternative minimum tax, takes those away from you because having a child is an abusive tax shelter. You didn't know that?
No. Is that for everybody, David?
Well, you have to have a large amount of exemptions or deductions.
Okay.
Here's how tough it gets. Let's
okay.
say you made $70,000 last year and you're married and have three kids.
Okay.
You take the standard deduction, right? You fill out the simple one-page tax return, you do the standard deduction.
Yes.
You'll pay some alternative minimum tax.
What?
Yep.
$70,000?
Yep.
I thought the threshold, David, was something like $110,000, $120,000-something.
Well, as originally written by Congress, in today's dollars, the threshold should be $1 million.
Whoa.
But people who make $50,000 to $500,000 are going to lose from a third to all of their Bush tax cuts to the alternative minimum tax. And Congress did this so that there would be enough money coming in to be able to have lower tax rates for the wealthiest people in America.
Tell me a little bit about how they sold everyone on this repealing of the estate tax on the idea that it affected everybody. It doesn't, does it?
You mean the bill to raise taxes on moderately wealthy people?
Yes.
Well, eliminating taxes on very, very rich people? Is
yeah,
that the bill you're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, let me write that one down. I want to speak of it properly, yeah.
Well, you have to understand the details of how it works, but the House has passed the bill to repeal the estate tax permanently, which means that if it were enacted, that a number of very large fortunes that have never been taxed, Bill Gates, among others, would not ever have their fortunes taxed.
Hmm.
And Bill Gates' fortune that he holds in Microsoft stock has never been taxed because he started the company with a tax-free gift from his parents. Now, whether this will pass the Senate or not, I don't know, but what I do know is that, as written, if you're a small businessman, listen to this, your taxes on your heirs will actually go up. Money they would have gotten tax-free will, whenever they sell your company or your stock portfolio, it'll be taxed.
Okay. Wait a minute, didn't they say that wasn't the whole rationale here to help out the small businessman? Wasn't that the wedge they used?
This is one of the most bizarre aspects of this. The Democrats offered back in, I think, 2001, and the only news story I know about it that appeared anywhere was my story in the New York Times, to immediately raise the threshold to $2 million for a person, $4 million for a couple, and with the extra for business, it would be over $6 million. So you'd be down to a few thousand people at most paying estate taxes in the whole country. It would be very large estates. And instead, the small business lobby and the Farm Bureau said, no, 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 we don't want that. We want to make you wait 9 years, and then you can have repeal. Just, you know, those of you who are 79 and not doing well, just figure out how to hang on for 9 years.
Oh, wow.
So, and that's because the real group of interest here, it wasn't small farmers, none of whom I've been able to find, and the White House hasn't ever been able to produce someone who lost their farm to the estate tax. It was because it was the super wealthy families who don't want to pay taxes. That's not all of them. A number of people, you know, wealthy people support the estate tax. Warren Buffett supports it, the second richest man in America. Bill Gates Sr., the father of Bill Gates, supports it. But those people who don't want to pay those taxes, people like the Gallows and the Mars family who put money into this, they would rather wait 9 years and have no tax on them. So that's what you got.
Okay, so now we're going to talk about, when we come back, David, I'll talk about the capital gains tax and maybe take some calls with people who have questions about some of this stuff, because there's some things that I need to have answered. I want to clearly make the case, as you did in your article for the SF Gate, about how the rich are screwing everybody. So we'll be back with David K. Johnston after this. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
50 past, 10 till. We're at Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
Our guest on the phone, David K. Johnston, is the author of Perfectly Legal, the covert campaign to rig our tax system to benefit the super rich and cheat everybody else. We will be taking calls over the top of the hour, 866-303-2270, for broad questions, not how to fill out a form, but yeah. If you have some input or you something.
I can't help you fill that form.
Okay.
I'm terrible at it.
I believe you can help us in making us all understand a little more about this capital gains tax. And I was surprised, I think, to read in your article for the San Francisco Chronicle, that there's really no mechanism in place for them to even tax these people properly, these people that make no money from actual income.
This was actually something I had reported earlier in the New York Times, and that was an adaptation for my book. But it's absolutely astonishing. You know, the government reports your wages, and therefore the government knows from your employer exactly what your wages were. But in the case of stock, here's what happens. You sell stock, and Ameritrade or Merrill Lynch tells the government you sold $100,000 of the stock last year.
Right.
It doesn't say what you paid for the stock. So let's assume you paid $1,000 for it. You made $99,000 profit, right?
Right.
That's what you're supposed to report. But if you put down $60,000 is what you paid for it, the government has no mechanism to check up on this. They don't make any effort to do it. There's a study by two professors, a business school professor in New Jersey, Jay Solon, and a law school professor, Joe Dodds, down in Florida. There's no evidence the government checks up on this, and it costs the government, they estimate, $29 billion a year in taxes.
Now, David, while they're watching all of this capital gains money stay in people's pockets, who are they going after?
Well, they have been going after primarily for a long time working class people at the bottom of the scale because Congress since 97 has given them extra money to do that, the working poor.
That's $1 billion in extra money?
Over the last 8 years, that's correct.
That's incredible.
Well, yeah, but, how many poor people can get their congressman on the phone to say, why are you harassing me?
Well, how does this affect things like, you know, if in your eyes, what should people be paying in taxes? You know, what? Before we get into that, though, what is the possibility? Now, I've been reading some pieces about the flattening of the tax. They're not calling it a flat tax, but it's starting to unfold that way. Is that true, and what does that mean?
Well, we may go to a flattened system. The alternative minimum tax is pretty close to a flat tax. And what a flat tax means is, basically, that people with the highest incomes will get a huge reduction in their tax burden. I mean, we have a system in which the very highest income people pay the highest taxes and disproportionately support the government and take it to the very upper stratosphere of income, you know, the top 5,000 or so taxpayers, and then they pay a lot less because of rules Congress has adopted. But the flat tax would basically shift the burden of taxes much more onto the middle class and the upper middle class than it is now.
Wow. So now it just seems that everything this administration is doing and the whole flow is to, you know, put the working poor and just the middle class, you know, in a financially compromised position to where they could never get out from under it.
Well, this started under the Clinton administration.
Okay. So
this is something that transcends political parties. And it basically has to do with the fact that the members of Congress, you know, they're all in safe districts now. How many congressional districts are not safe? Two?
Yeah.
And so instead of having, you know, the bipartisanship we used to see with people moving towards the center, you have both the Democrats and Republicans moving towards the outer edges. And, you know, ordinary folks aren't winners in that. It's the 17,000 lobbyists in Washington and the clients they represent who are the winners in that system.
But, David, if you listen to George Bush, and I remember him doing this on the campaign trail back in 2000, he made it sound as though low-wage earners don't pay any tax at all. Who's right here?
Well, they don't pay income taxes if they apply for the earned income tax credit. On the other hand, if you're a single person, as you work full time, as soon as your wages hit $3.52 an hour, which you'll notice is less than the minimum wage,
mm-hmm.
you start paying income taxes. But basically, the bottom half of Americans, they pay a tiny fraction of the taxes in this country, and it's mostly single people who are at the bottom who are paying those taxes. But you know, the president said in 2000 in his campaign that my tax cut's fair because the top 1% make a fifth of the income and pay more than a third of the taxes. Well, what he ignored in that is what happens with the top half of 1% and the top tenth of 1%. The only people whose income tax cuts are larger than their share of income are the top half of 1%. And over the first 15 years of the Bush tax cuts, 26% of all the savings goes to the top one half of 1%.
That's unbelievable. And if that money was, now, in your eyes, how, what is the fair system? How should it work? And would this solve a lot of our economic problems, you know, i.e. Social Security and stuff like that?
Well, the fundamental principle that has been around for 2,500 years, the idea that spawned democracy in Athens, is taxation based on ability to pay. The richer the society made you, the more you should pay back to that society in taxes so that that society continues to endure.
And that was before free market thinking.
Actually, I've had a number of people who are described in the news media as conservatives. I don't think they're conservatives. I think they're radicals. Say things like, well, we have nothing to do with Western civilization. And, you know, you think there have been no new ideas since, the 1800s. I thought conservatives liked those things. But in any event, the shift has clearly been to move away from taxing capital, which is where people at the very top get their money, dividends, capital gains, rents, and royalties, and to taxing wages, which are easy for the government to track.
Mm-hmm.
You know, David, what you seem to be describing is a situation that Mark and I were talking about this earlier, where, you know, the average Joe Schmo is running to the post office trying to get his tax returns in on time, and there's a whole group of people, maybe not a lot of them, but a lot of very wealthy people are just sitting back going, and April 15th means nothing to them.
And, well, it means something to them because they're paying. And, you know, let me make sure you understand their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
If you made $100 million last year, can you imagine that kind of an income, all right?
Well, yeah, of course I can.
Sure. You paid what I believe is the government, the Bush administration won't give out the numbers anymore, so we don't know. But my calculations suggest that those people paid, if you made $100 million, you probably paid $18 million. Now, on the one hand, you can say, hey, you're only paying 18%. That's the way I would look at it. The guy who's doing this would say, I paid $18 million.
Right, right. Okay, we're going to talk more about that. We got calls on the line. David K. Johnson, stay with us. A lot of people have questions. 866-303-2270 is the number. We'll talk to you in a second here on Air America Radio. That's the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens. We're on the phone with David K. Johnston, the author of Perfectly Legal, The Covert Campaign to Rig Our Tax System to Benefit the Super Rich and Cheat Everybody Else. We're taking your calls with questions for Mr. Johnston. Billy in Nags Head, North Carolina, what's on your mind?
Hey, Billy.
Hey, Mr. Johnston. Hey, Mark. Forgot the other name.
Mark.
I actually had a couple points. I didn't get to tell one of them to your call screener, but I would like, sort of at the end of this, if your guest would mention what he thinks the pros and cons of a consumption tax are, especially in light of the being able to take away the argument of the right about illegal aliens not contributing to the system.
Okay, and what about the family question you had?
Yeah, the main question, or the main reason I called was my wife and I just thought our taxes, and oddly enough, came up to exactly the same figure that he was talking about, the $70,000 was our net income. And I took out quite a few deductions, and I didn't run into the alternative minimum tax.
Did you use the short form?
No, I had to take the long form.
No, and see,
many,
he said...
And how many children do you have?
Hold on. How many children do you have?
I had two children, and I had about $9,000 in medical expenses. So I was able to recoup about $4,000 out of that. Our $4,000 worth of reduction because of that, and I probably had another couple $1,000 due to business expenses.
Well, Billy, did you do your taxes using a computer program or by hand?
No, I initially did them. I was running into some problems, and I got a Liberty Tax Service, a local tax service around here.
Well, you look on line 44 of your return. That's the alternative. I think that's the number this year, maybe 42 or 3. I guess the alternative minimum tax, and see if there's a number there. And if you fall into the alternative minimum tax, and you may not have, but if you do, one of the things you lose part of because it's an abusive tax shelter is medical deductions. It's literally the policy in this country that if you run up a big enough medical bill, we raise your income taxes so that rich people can pay lower taxes.
Okay, so check that out, Billy. Thanks for your call.
Thanks a lot for the call.
We're talking to Marie in Atlanta. Marie?
Hi, Marie.
Good morning.
What's
Good
up?
Morning, Mark and Mark. I love you guys.
Thank you so much.
I'm calling. Actually, I wanted to comment on the whole subject of corporate taxes, specifically the fact that, you know, corporations get all these tax breaks because, in theory, they create jobs. And for a long time, that may have been true. But, in fact, now they're shipping jobs overseas, shutting down factories, essentially driving towns, you know, to the brink of bankruptcy. And yet they still get the deductions. They still get the tax break.
Let me put that to our guest, David K. Johnson. Thanks for your call, Marie.
Thanks, Marie.
How do you address that?
The share of federal revenues coming from corporations has been falling steadily. In the Eisenhower years, it was about a third of the government's revenues. It's now down around, or it's below 10%. And Congress keeps, you know, it's been argued by some people that Congress has a constituency of 500, the Fortune 500. It isn't all corporations, though, that benefit. If you're a purely domestic company and you're a family-owned business, you are disadvantaged compared to multinational companies. Well, that's who Congress loves. That's who they give the biggest tax favors to, are the multinational companies.
And why is that specifically? Is that they bring the most campaign money? They bring the most money into their districts? They're bought off? Why is that?
They're the ones who have the most influence.
Because of the money.
They have the biggest concentrated economic interest in the tax law.
And that's also the bankruptcy legislation that went through today, yesterday as well.
David, one of our previous callers mentioned the consumption tax. What is up with that? I mean, does that mean you get taxed on what you buy?
That's exactly what it means. And Billy raised a very good point. If we went to some forms of consumption tax, not all of them, then people who are not paying taxes in the underground economy, people who are here illegally, would pay taxes. The thing about a consumption tax is most people consume most of their income. They don't save most of it. But if you make, you know, if you're my $100 million a year example, or you even have $1 million a year income, you're saving a lot of that. And therefore, you're not consuming it, and therefore, you won't pay taxes. So what does a consumption tax do? It shifts the burden of taxes off of the richest people, the people who got rich because America is here, because of our government, and it shifts it on to people with less. And the other thing with a consumption tax that will happen, especially if we had a national retail sales tax, we have people now who furtively slip into buildings, you know, to buy drugs.
Sure.
Well, we'll have people furtively slipping into buildings to buy mink coats.
Have you been to New York? It's already happening,
right,
my friend. So we got a practical question from Bernadine in Cincinnati, listening to WCKY. Good morning, Bernadine.
Hi.
Hi, guys. David K. Johnson, you're one of my heroes. I have your book. Thank you guys for having him on.
Mm-hmm.
He's great. What I want to say is that we need to have a new conversation about taxes. The corporations and the rich people that are not paying taxes are the unpatriotic people. They're taking money away from infrastructure, schools, education, and medical care. And we need to have a new conversation about that.
Okay.
I think one of the most important things that we've lost in this country is the sense that our taxes buy us something.
Exactly. Shared with social
responsibility. And they do. They buy us our civilization. And we really need to have a conversation about the fact that taxes are not just, you know, money that's burned and the ashes thrown into the ocean.
Thanks. Okay.
David K. Johnson, can I say one more thing?
Sure, go ahead.
Isn't it true that actually rich people and corporations get more benefit from the government and so should pay a huge, much more taxes?
Oh, no, exactly. There's no question about that.
Thanks for your call, Bernadine.
Thanks, Bernadine.
The idea is, and the false idea is that with this model, they keep saying that the reason that they're going to give people more money who have more money is that's going to encourage spending within the country, encourage new businesses, encourage new jobs, but that isn't really what happens, is it, David?
Well, it's pretty complicated, Mark.
Okay.
I don't want to oversimplify it, but if you concentrate all the tax cuts at the top, and more than a quarter of the Bush tax cuts go to the top one half of 1% in the first 15 years, and
yeah,
it gets worse as you go out beyond that, what you're doing is allowing those people to get richer and richer, and as they do, they get more and more politically powerful, and in a global economy, They don't have to create jobs here. They don't have to invest here. They don't have to spend here. They can just enjoy all the benefits of being in America.
Oh, man, that sucks. All right, let's take one more call. David in Manhattan, how are you? What's on your mind?
Hey, David.
Hi there. I'm an enrolled agent, which means I'm licensed to practice in front of the Internal Revenue Service, and I do tax returns for a living. And I recently, last summer, went to the National Association of Tax Professionals conference and got a chance to talk to the commissioner of the IRS, and I asked him if he had read David K. Johnston's book, and he had actually received a summary of it. And I said, because I read it last year, and it made my hair hurt. it's just with the AMT. I have clients in New York. The AMT discriminates against places that have high state and local income taxes. I have clients who only have state and local income taxes as deductions, and they hit the AMT with nothing else. It's just an absurd thing. I have clients who would be getting $5,000 back, but instead owe $5,000 because of the AMT. It's absolutely incredibly horrible, horrible, horrible. It's the flat tax in action.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Thanks for the call.
That's a good point. It's the flat tax in action. That's a very good way to put it.
Well, thanks for all the information, David K. Johnston. We always like talking to you.
Well, thank you, Mark, and you too, Mark.
All right, we appreciate it.
Take care. The book is perfectly legal, The Covert Campaign to Rig Our Tax System to Benefit the Super Rich and Cheat Everybody Else. I'll tell you, if people buy this book, they love that guy, you know, because he's got very practical information about how we're getting screwed and what can make this country better, and that's just the kind of thing that people like to hear. We'll be back. We're going to talk about, once again, how the Republicans are screwing us and how, but there is a little challenge in the Senate. Harry Reid and Bill Frist, we've gotten a little turf from them, and it's exciting. We'll tell you about that when we come back. 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley over there.
Good morning.
Man, we learned a lot about taxes, didn't we?
Sure did.
Old man Krieger, the old CEO of our company.
Old man Krieger now,
Old man Krieger. Apparently swept in or something, but he said the food's coming from City Bakery. I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. But
what'd you call him?
No, he sent an email. He apologized. I appreciate it, Doug. How are you? Thanks. I'll be looking forward to the food any second now, apparently. I like free food. And that's some good stuff. I'm not going to go into it. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what mainstream media is saying. But thank God we got this machine, the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi Headline Translator. All right, here we go. Let's read some headlines. From the New York Times, Texan is indicted in Iraq oil sales by Hussein AIDS. Texan is indicted in Iraq oil sales by Hussein AIDS. Translation, Bush eyes enterprising Texan as next energy czar. From Fox News, Senate passes measure to ban fake news. Okay, Senate passes measure to ban fake news. Translation, Fox News to lay off 75% of editorial staff. From Reuters, Nevada bill to tax stripping unconstitutional, ACLU says. Nevada bill to tax stripping unconstitutional, ACLU says. Translation, fighting poll tax, ACLU gets extension. Wop, 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 bop. All right, here we go. So let's get into this. I had no idea that there was a Democratic war room within the Senate. Did you, Riley?
That crafty Harry Reid.
Who knew, man? I'm excited.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
I am too. I mean, look, he set this up. I think, people who have been screaming, what are the Democrats doing? What are the Democrats doing?
Apparently they're doing something.
On the down low, no less.
Yeah, so what exactly happened here?
Well, I mean, what's going on is that the Republicans are now getting a little scared about their filibuster thing.
Yes, the nuclear option.
The nuclear option. They're beginning to think that Harry Reid's little war room that nobody knew about is starting to whip their behind on this thing.
They're starting to hijack the frame.
Yeah, they're trying to hijack the frame. They're starting to wonder how come Harry Reid, you know, this guy that we really thought we'd be able to walk all over, has apparently created this war room that has changed public opinion about this filibuster bill. Not filibuster bill, but the filibuster option, the nuclear option.
Well, I think that what's starting to happen in a broader way, Riley, is that, you know, the Democrats are starting, you know, through our momentum, through what we do here, through this war room, through everything else, is starting to turn some of their frames on their head and actually accuse them for what they are, anti-constitutional, you know, un-American. They want to impede the way the Senate operates. The filibuster is there for a reason. The judiciary branch is there for a reason. And I think that some people are starting to, you know, regular Americans are starting to realize that this power grab is in play and it's overreaching, and that's the frame that they've reset on these guys, and Frist knows it.
Well, yeah, and what Harry Reid did was what any smart politician would do. He stood up there and he looked and he said, wait a minute, well, we got the legislators over here, we've got advocacy groups like MoveOn.org, we've got places like Air America, right? We've got all these different organizations that are all talking about the same things, all opposing this whole filibuster effort. And what Reid's war room was set up to do was to coordinate all of the public positions among these different groups. It was headed by a guy named Jim Manley, who Harry Reid hired in December from the office of, guess who? Our good friend, Senator Ted Kennedy.
Right.
And they staffed it with some other people, Stephanie Cutter, who was a spokesperson for John Kerry, and a few others. And now they've got a 20-person team that is going out there and shaping the frames of the filibuster debate. Because, quite frankly, I think a lot of people felt that the Republicans would win on this simply because the American public didn't know from filibusters, didn't know what the parameters were. Bill Clinton did a very important thing when he kind of read Katie Couric. We played that sound earlier this week. When he framed it by saying, wait a minute, we're talking about 10 out of over 200. When I was president, they wouldn't confirm 40 of mine, four times the number.
Well, what's interesting, too, is just how insistent the Republicans are at keeping their core, their base, stupid. In that, you know, Bill Frist is now, you know, and not unlike DeLay, is scurrying off to the far margins of their party's base to appease the most religiously fanatic of them, the most, you know, the most outspokenly wrong of their base to look for love and votes and support. Apparently there is a some sort of large crystal fascist zombie brigade event.
The telecast.
Yes. It's organized by the Family Research Council.
Tony Perkins, Major Domo.
Yep. It's scheduled to originate at a Kentucky megachurch evening of April 24th. It's going to be called Justice Sunday. It's going to basically say that the filibuster was once used. This is on the flyer. Quote, the filibuster against people of faith. This is what they're trying to characterize us as Democrats are against people of faith. And this is in terms of the judiciary nominees, because these whack jobs really feel that this is their hole, this is their gap, this is their door to put in, you know, crystal fascist judges to determine how this country is supposed to operate. They don't understand that the filibuster and the judiciary are both there to protect democracy. They do understand that, but they want their base to think that Democrats stand against faith. They want their base to remain religiously retarded to the truth of how constitutional democracy works so they can gain power.
Well, in pure political terms, they ought to take a good look at exactly who many people in Congress are shouting about in terms of these judges and the out-of-control judiciary. Who are they shouting at? They're shouting at Reagan appointees. They're shouting at George H.W. Bush appointees. They're shouting at conservative Republican appointees.
These people are, you know, if I can read a quote from Mr. Perkins from the Family Research Council, quote, the issue of the judiciary is really something that has been veiled by this, quote unquote, judicial mystique. So our folks
don't really understand it, but they are beginning to connect the dots, end quote. They are not beginning to connect any dots. What he's doing is he's simplifying it and lying to them about what's really going on. And because they're so religiously delusionary and that they are unable to see how America works, they are aligning themselves with an anti-American agenda by aligning themselves with Focus on the Family.
Well, see, Bill Frist has got a problem. He's leaving the Senate next year. He wants to run for president in 08, which leaves open the question, what does he do to make sure he's still got a base of support during 07 into 08? This is the first step. Go, you know, speak before these people, talk to the James Dobsons, talk to the Tony Perkinses,
mistake,
and hope their constituents are still around and still ready to support him 2 years from now when he decides to run.
Look, if they're saying that Democrats are against faith, how crazy are they? Who has more faith than Democrats, considering what we've been through in the last couple years?
Well, absolutely, and this is politics, folks. Don't let them fool you that this is about moral values or any of the rest of this. The Bill Frist, the Tom DeLays of the world, they're looking out for themselves. They're not even looking out for these sats they call evangelicals.
We're going to come back and talk to a woman who is very wealthy and donating $100,000 of her tax break to charity. Yeah. How do you like that? And some other rich people are doing it, too. She's going to tell us about it when we come back on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
I think so.
Yes, you are. You're definitely there. I see you. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Let's take this call. It's Ted in Nebraska. How are you, Ted?
Good morning. You liberals have no sense of proportion when it comes to taxes. You think the answer to everything is to just tax and tax.
I know what's happening. Oh, no. I hate when it's... Help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no. It's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
And now, live from Radio Halliburton, it's Right and Early, the conservative's way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocons! That's right, 10 past the hour here on Radio Halliburton. Halliburton, spending your tax dollar wisely, not like PBS. So today's the deadline for filling your taxes, for filing those taxes, for filling out those forms. I think I'm going to... Oh, there's a little extra income for you. Get it? Income. Get it? And ladies, I fill out the long form. That's right. But let me tell you, Mark the Shark hates tax season, hates it. Where's my money going anyway, huh?
Oh, I'm a welfare queen. I'm on 12 kinds of public assistance. I drove to the welfare office in my new Cadillac. Excuse me while I go get pregnant again. Oops, there's another baby. I'll just have the government take care of it. Thanks, Mark the Shark.
Hey, back off from the truck, Porky. I got some permanent daycare for your litter. Bacon! When will those Washington liberals get their hands out of my pockets? You know what fancy writer David Halberstam would call this?
I thought it was odious.
Yeah, that's right, Grandpa. Hey, IRS, audit this. Yeah, a little of this. Wait, I got one more thing to declare. Spend it wisely, Uncle Sam. Here's the only thing you can use Mark the Shark's tax dollars for.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
Yeah, it's 12 past the hour. Let's take a call. You're on the air, caller.
Limousine liberals, gun control, tree huggers, sodomites.
That's right, you are. They should legalize cat hunting in Wisconsin and everywhere. Hell, Mark the Shark's been doing it for years. Here, kitty, 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 here, kitty. Yeah. You've been sharked. Tie that to the hood, boys. We're eating pussycat tonight. Hey, it's 13 after the hour time for the neocon traffic forecast. Ooh, looks like a big traffic jam on Judicial Confirmation Highway. Must be obstructionist Democrats again. Somebody needs to drag them to this side of the road. That's more like it. Stick around, neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Don't touch that dial, Patriot. We'll be back with Right and Early.
Man, I sneezed and then I went out.
Are you okay, man?
I went out.
You almost gave Chris Lopresto a heart attack. I just want you to know
that. No, because he freaked out because I passed out on the floor and you just sat there and laughed?
No, because you were, while you were out, you said something.
I did. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Sorry,
but that's okay, man.
Did it turn out all right?
Yeah, everything turned out.
I hate that. I got to get that fixed. I have to get my brain fixed. Right now, we all know that Bush's tax cuts benefit the wealthy, but what happens when the wealthy don't want his tax cuts? We are joined on the phone now by a member of Responsible Wealth, a group of wealthy Americans who have gotten together to fight for a more progressive tax structure, Elizabeth Letzler. Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good morning.
Good. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the organization. What exactly is Responsible Wealth?
Well, Responsible Wealth is a group of about 850 wealthy people that, more specifically, people with a large sum of investable assets,
mm-hmm.
and like stocks and bonds and those sorts of things.
The stuff that it's that's hard to tax.
Well, stocks and bonds are very easy to tax because usually they're held in a brokerage house.
Okay.
So you can track the money. You can track the money trail.
Okay.
The only thing is that the people who own them have a tendency to feel that they should get a free ride in life, and so therefore the tax rate on stocks and bonds is among the lowest of all tax rates, 15%.
Right. Yeah. We just talked to David K. Johnston about that. And why are you a member? What moved you all? How long have you been a member? And what was it that made you a member?
I've been a member, for about 4 or 5 years.
Uh-huh.
And what was important to me is Responsible Wealth really focuses on three things, really: tax fairness, maintaining the estate tax, and also they are into corporate accountability. And those are three things that are just really very important to me. And the guys who run Responsible Wealth, they're just kind of cool and funky people, and I really enjoy them too.
All right, that's fantastic.
It's fun.
But you know, what I'm curious about here is, do you just leave the money with Uncle Sam? Do you take it and give it to somebody else? Do you just send it? You know, if they send you a check, do you just send it back? How does that work?
All right. Well, first of all, don't misunderstand me. I'm just like anybody else. I have no desire to pay more tax than I owe. Okay, and that's what I pay. I use TurboTax, and I calculate my tax, and I pay what is owed. The issue here is how much I owe. I don't really feel that the distribution of the tax burden among people is right. It's just not right
for
my dividend income to be taxed at 15% while people who work for a living pay 35 and 40. It's just not right, and that's the issue. It isn't that I want to give the government more money, okay? It's that I feel that the burden of the tax structure should be placed fairly on people. And people who work for a living shouldn't be paying a lot more than people who don't, like me.
So you're saying that, you know, the burden should be placed more fairly on people, but you don't want to pay the government more money, but the money that you should be paying the government, you're going to put into something else.
Well, absolutely. And
okay.
The Bush tax cuts have brought me about $100,000.
Oh, my God. I got an idea for that. Riley and I
We can split it 50-50 over here.
What are you doing with it?
So, actually, I've given it away. As of last Monday, I gave it all away. I give it all away.
Well, I mean, what, on the street? Did you just walk around throwing money around?
No. There are several organizations, 501c3s, that are just very near and dear to my heart, and so I have given to them. And just so you know, two of them are church-based organizations. Jesus was a liberal. Don't let anybody tell you differently.
Yeah, it's just the followers that he has now are questionable, some of them.
No. It's the loud and shrill ones who claim to be followers. The true followers are liberals.
Yes, I've had this conversation before. So let's say that you were taxed properly and the government took the money that you would think that would be proportionate to what other people are being taxed who work for a living. How would you feel about that? Do you just not to trust the government with the money to do what's appropriate with it?
Well, the thing is that when we talk about tax, we're really talking about three separate and distinct questions, and they need to be addressed separately, not all together in one big blob.
Okay.
And the first question is, what goods and services are we going to buy collectively through the government?
Right.
And I have real arguments, by the way, with what they're buying these days.
Okay, good, good.
Then the second question is, how much are we willing to pay for all that?
Mm-hmm.
And then the third question is, who pays how much?
Right, and who makes the decisions as to what's being paid for.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I get it.
Now, the first question, I have big arguments.
Sure.
I'd strip the Defense Department down to nothing.
Okay, you know? Yeah.
Support the troops and get them out.
Right.
But, you know, that's not the question we're addressing here today. The question is that, you know, Americans apparently have decided through their elected and unelected officials that we're going to buy these goods and services, and this is how much we're going to pay for it. Now, what's my portion of it?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that they have assigned the people at the high end of the income spectrum a fair proportion. They've offloaded onto the wage earners and those who really don't have voice and power in the government. And I think it's just flat out wrong.
Let me shift gears ever so slightly and ask you if you believe that, and there seem to be a good number of Americans who believe that their tax dollars, no matter how much they pay, are just simply not well spent. You talk about the Defense Department, you talk about some of these other agencies in terms of where America puts the money, but is the money well spent generally as far as you're concerned?
No. Personally, I think the government, certainly under this administration, is one big boondoggle for Halliburton.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying. So, well, this is interesting, but you would ultimately, if you had an administration that you agree with, or we restructured the government properly, that people should, you'd feel probably better about paying the taxes. But until then, you're going to choose what you do with the money that you are getting back from this irresponsible tax cut the Bush administration has kept in place.
Right. As a matter of fact, a group I'm involved with, Business Leaders for Sensible Priorities, just did a survey of a bunch of people on their tax priorities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you could distribute the tax money, how would you distribute it among all the programs? And overwhelmingly, they would shift money from the Defense Department into education, health care, finding alternatives to oil.
Sure.
Those kinds of things.
Alternative energy sources.
This is very academically robust and, from a social science research point of view, valid survey. And this survey has been done several times in the past. And the results are always the same. Americans really want their money spent on the kinds of things that make our lives as Americans good. And education, health care.
It's interesting because the conversation, because you were talking with people with inordinate wealth who are wanting to do what's responsible, fiscally responsible with their money, almost sounds like it's a stone's throw away from a meeting of investors ready to build what the government should have built anyways. And on some level, that's almost what the neocons want with a free market. It's not an insult. It's just curious.
No, you just kind of lost me. The thing is, it's a free market and the government, you know, Social welfare and the free market don't always intersect.
Absolutely, okay. Well, I understand what you're saying. I want to thank you for being fiscally responsible, and I want to thank you for being with us this morning, Liz. Appreciate you talking to us.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks
you take
a lot.
Care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. It's 45. I didn't mean to confuse her, but in some level, the discussion is getting very close to having private citizens, you know, take care, you know, to take up the loose, you know, to privatize, you know, public programs or that what used to be public programs, social programs, schools and whatnot.
Yeah.
That there is, it's not too far away from that on some level.
Well, I mean, if these folks end up putting their money into programs that might be getting defunded by the government. See, that's the other side of the equation.
Yeah.
I mean, in some instances, you see government pulling away from housing, pulling away from public transportation, pulling away from a lot of these things that have really proved to have been life-changing situations, particularly for people who live in urban areas.
But,
and maybe that, you know, maybe if some of it could be put to that, it might really do a great job. Now, it can't substitute for government money.
But it's interesting that, you know, that philanthropies, outside of religious philanthropies, how many of them actually do, you know, reasonably, you know, affordable housing, middle to lower class housing? How many of them really do these kinds of social programs that fund alternative energy resources? You would think that if the charity is big enough that they would have money to really do a lot of that.
Well, a lot of them work on a grassroots level, and a lot of them, you know, depend on grant writing and that sort of thing. I belong to an organization that actually disperses money to organizations like Habitat for Humanity and things like that. And what you find is they're just trying to pull little strands of donations from different sources. They get some rather large donations, but some of them really want to stay away from corporate giving.
because they feel that corporate giving comes with strings attached, and corporate giving in many instances is the biggest form of giving.
Okay.
To a lot of these organizations. So some of them, you know, I mean, they're really trying to rob Peter to pay Paul in a lot of
ways. I get it. Yeah, I hope I didn't, well, it doesn't matter. It's 47 past the hour. We'll be back. We're going to see what everyone's doing with their tax return money after this. Air America Radio.
This is Congressman Barney Frank, and you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's going to land this thing. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition.
Hey.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm sitting here wondering where the food is. Old Man Krieger said he's going to send us food.
Old Man Krieger.
And I don't know where the food is. And I'm thinking it's downstairs. And I'm thinking Franken's people are getting into it. I'm sitting here going, let's all go downstairs and make sure that Franken's people don't eat the food. But you tell me he's on vacation.
No, he's out of town. He's been doing a show from out of town, hasn't he?
Oh, we should go do our show from out of town. That's what we got to do. We got Dan Pashman, Son of Lewis, and Linda Pashman here. Kent the Colonel Jones there. P.W. McDonald. They're all in the room here. They're going to. What we're talking about taxes. How much you getting back, Dan? You have any idea?
I'm actually the same as Day, Mark. I haven't filed my taxes yet.
What?
I got to finish them up when I get home today and mail them in.
Did you get an extension, or are you just going to try and get it in by midnight tonight?
Well, today's the 15th. I'll go home. I'll finish them up. I'll try to do it before my nap at, 1 o'clock.
So you have any idea how much you're going
to probably, $100 or $200.
You got any big plans for the money? Springsteen tickets?
Yeah, I wish.
A new bat?
Yeah. No, the new bat is going to be factored into the softball team's budget.
Which, by the way, he's had plenty of time for that.
Yeah. Man, you think that Dan Pashman was putting together a Major League Baseball team for Air America.
Yeah. The uniforms are on the way.
Yeah, he's the Omar Minaya of AAR.
It's the Air America Radio Jim Earls.
That's us. Yeah. We open the season April 28th. Very excited.
Yeah. What do you got planned for your tax return? You know how much you're getting back?
I do. It's a healthy amount, I would not to say.
But I'm just
funneling it back to the credit card goons.
Oh.
You know, it's like no joy for Kent.
No, really?
It goes right back to the suits and their 18% interest and all that crap.
You get to look at the check. You just get to sort of go, here, let me just sign this over to
Yeah,
them.
I get to just look at it and go, pretty. Oh. Here, you have it.
Yeah.
The man.
The man gets it.
The man gets my check.
PW, what do you got?
I was thinking of putting it into those bets that your Beltway insider.
Johnny K.
A terrific bet, don't you think?
I think so.
Yeah, I think it's a great bet. I don't care what anybody says.
That was a bet?
Oh, you didn't know that?
I was planning on investing my refund.
Oh, wait. Let's reverse. That guy's cool. I guess he had to go over.
He's very informed. I got my money on Tom DeLay, Dead Hooker in the Trunk.
That was 30 to 1 odds.
That's a long shot.
But 30 to 1 isn't too bad.
Yeah. Kayla,
don't pout.
What's up?
I know you're just sitting there going, is he going to ask me what I'm going to do with my money? Are you going to buy yourself your own Gillette system?
Right.
And then immediately smash it with a hammer.
For those of you who don't know, Gillette is the program that we have here that runs everything, and occasionally it thinks on its own.
Yeah.
And things happen. What are you going to do? You know how much you're getting back, Chris?
Yeah.
I'm going to back $200.
$200?
Yes.
Ooh.
I'm going to take the little lady out for dinner.
The little lady's going out for dinner. $200. You can go to Daniel for that.
Maybe.
Not if you drink.
You can go one frog's leg for that.
No appetizers.
I have no idea how much I'm getting back. Do you, Riley?
Know
how much I'm getting back?
I have no idea what you're getting back. I'm supposed to be getting back a hefty amount, which I will not mention here.
Really?
If there's a God.
Oh, that's nice.
And, I'm planning on, doing things like paying my daughter's school tuition. Yeah, stuff like that.
Wow, that's frivolous spending. Paying the kid's school tuition.
Yeah.
Jeez, why don't you do something nice?
Yeah, I know. Well, there is a ball
bar down the street from me. I could go, you know, just
throw it all away.
Drunk.
Throw the life away.
Yeah.
Throw it away.
Yeah. Every now and then, you know, you kind of think you're not worthy of doing what you're doing and getting paid what you get paid. And every now and then you just want to go, you know. But I don't do that.
Maybe, I don't even, maybe I'll get an iPod. I think somebody actually offered to give me an iPod. I think I
a listener?
Yeah, I know.
That's Plugola.
But I think, I think they're affiliated with somebody. I don't know what it is. It's a gift. I don't know what. You know what it is?
Hey, I'm sorry. Before we go, can we find out what Wayne Gellman is going to do with his tax return?
Oh, I know what he's doing with his tax
return. Wayne, we can hear you. What do you got?
Wayne is buying another property.
Okay.
I can't discuss that on the air.
Got your eyes on some stuff out in Co-op City in the Bronx, do you?
We're not discussing that on the air.
Okay. I need some real estate advice. Hey, there's the fax machine from the Streisand compound. Here's a liberal agenda for today. Write these down, liberal soldiers, for tax day. All right, one, request an emergency extension of your rights, people.
Yeah.
Two, in the IRS comment box, explain that you claim your parents as dependents, quote, because you won't take care of them, you bastards, unquote. Three, mail in your return using the new Reagan stance, but stick Ronnie facing backwards. They'll totally hate that. Yeah, do that. Four, if you can figure out, you got to have to glue it. Anyway, four, come to think of it, it's not the mail system, it's female, or possibly even female.
Yeah.
Five, today's phrase, just drop this in the conversation. Gee, I hope all my taxes go to invade some other oil-rich third-world nations. Wake up, sheeple. It's Operation Alaskan Freedom.
Oh.
All right, then.
Hey.
Robert Reich is coming on Monday.
Rice is coming on Monday, and not on the telephone. We've talked to him. I don't know how
he's
many times.
In?
He's coming in to the studio.
Man, I'm going to get him to sign something.
Yeah. Maybe one of our run sheets. Fellas, it's been a great week.
Good week. Have a good weekend, Riley.
Yeah, you too. And see we'll you see you guys. Monday, fellas.
See you Monday.
This is Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition on Air America Radio.